Hi, I'm Tatiana Rotary, and you are listening to Crazy Grief, the podcast. Grief can make us feel like we're going crazy. It affects our emotions, our physical health, and our mental state. It has a huge impact in the way that we relate to people and the way we see ourselves. Crazy Grief is a safe space for us to have candid conversations about grief and all the crazy stuff that comes with it. We want to open up, share our stories, how we cope with it, and what kind of help really helps. If you lost your person and you feel like you are going crazy, let me reassure you, you're not going crazy. You're just grieving. So let's talk about it. Our guest today is Yuri Naev. Yuri is the host of the podcast Awkward Mind. Yuri worked for 15 years in live entertainment and event production. Now he has a new mission. He wants to help people live their best lives by improving their minds and with it, their health, wealth, and relationships. And that's why he started the Awkward Mind podcast, where every week he has meaningful conversations with real people about the things that truly matter. Hi, Yuri. Thank you so much for being here with us today.
Hi, Tatiana. Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Well, we just figured out that we are 16 hours apart because Yuri is all the way in New York and I am in Auckland, New Zealand. So it was a little tricky to figure out a time to get together. But I'm so grateful that we have you here today, because when I was looking at some of the questions that I have for you and based on your experience, I think this will be really, really beneficial for our listeners. So let's just go and dive straight into it. So would you be able to share with us a little bit about your personal experience with grief?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I guess let's back up. So I was a freshman in college and I had never, so I was 19 years old at the time, and I had never experienced a personal loss in my life, because my three out of my four grandparents passed away before I was born, because I was a gift to my much older brother, who is 11 years older. So he got to see most of the grandparents. I only got to meet my grandma. And November of my freshman year in college, I got a call from my mom. And she broke the news to me. I mean, my grandma had passed away. And she was 80 years old at the time. And so that hit me pretty hard, because that was the first time that I had experienced something like that on a personal level. And so we dealt with that, and we can dig into that if you want and unpack some of that. But then when I was home for the funeral, for my grandma's funeral, I realized that because my mom's brother, right? So this was their mom, passed away, my grandma. He came from Canada for the funeral, and he noticed something in my mom that I hadn't, because she had been losing weight for a while, but it's something she actually wanted to do, because she was a little bit overweight, and it's sort of self-conscious about it. So I didn't think much of it, except that when her brother, my uncle, came for the funeral, for my grandma's funeral, he pulled me aside and he said something that he was noticing something in his sister and my mom that he wasn't happy about. And so I started paying more attention to that. And then I guess we buried my grandma, and you know, that was interesting. I don't know if interesting is the right word when it comes to grief, but experiencing all of that for the first time, you know, the funeral home and I wasn't involved in the planning. My mom and my dad did all that, but just being in the funeral home and seeing the casket and all that, and then going to the cemetery. And so I sort of processed it, but I don't really show my emotions. So I just kind of grieved internally for my grandma. Like, I basically, the day my mom called me, I cried. But that was it. So for me, I thought I had dealt with it. So fast forward to the end of the semester, I come home for Christmas break, and my mom tells me, "Oh, I need to go to the hospital to have a procedure done. There's fluid in my stomach, but it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it. Well, I knew because of something my uncle pointed out at my grandma's funeral, I knew that it was more serious than that. I just didn't know exactly what. And so we went Christmas morning to the emergency room, because that's where it was like this weird process that I realized afterwards why, and we can unpack that. But basically my mom hid a lot of it and didn't want to address some of it. But so by the time, so we went to the emergency room because that's where the doctor that basically referred her was, is at that hospital. And so when we got her and admitted her, and she was still wearing this facade for me of like, oh, everything's fine, I'm going to be out in a few days. But when my dad and I were alone, he told me that it's cancer and it's probably serious. And she didn't want me to know to the last day. And that was Christmas morning. And on January 8th, 2005, my mom passed away.
Wow, that was very fast, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Christmas.
Yeah, so it was colon cancer that she basically ignored. So by the time she was forced to do something about it, because between my uncle and my dad, who realized around the same time, they forced her to go to the doctor and find out what was going on, it was basically too late.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for your vulnerability and for sharing this, which is, I know that it's quite a few years now that your mom passed mm-hmm. away, but even then, for a lot of people, when we share about those things, like emotions can be triggered and we can, our memory bring us back there, you know, and so there's things that stir up inside of us. But so thank you so much for sharing that with us. We hold it really precious, you know, it's a very precious part of your life that we have the privilege to have a little insight into. Something that really struck me when you were sharing was a couple of things. One was to lose your grandma and then lose your mom in a space of less than a year, a few months actually. So that must have been really difficult, especially because you're a very young person. And like you said, you didn't experience any other losses before that. So interesting or weird, whatever that experience was with your grandma, then all of a sudden having to relive those things with your mother, that must have been really difficult at the time, especially for a young person that is having to process so many difficult things at that stage in life. You know, you're kind of launching yourself into adulthood, but you're not a kid, but you're not a grown up yet. So, very, very complex things to deal with. And then being thrusted into that grief tsunami almost. Something else that I just wanted us to talk a little bit about, which is, I think as parents, and I can speak that for myself and for people that I know, we always want the best for our children. We would rather be sick than see them sick. You know, we would rather go through hardships than see them going through hardships. And out of this desire to protect our kids, we often hide things from them. So I think that out of love and out of care and out of wanting to protect our kids, we end up not involving them in really difficult conversations. And I have the sense that this is something that perhaps your mom might have felt, like she wanted to reassure you so that you wouldn't suffer. And then boom, you are in an emergency hospital and she has cancer, and a few days later she passes away. Looking back, and I know we cannot change things, but how was that for you? Like, in terms of how did you relate to the news, but also how did that impact your relationship with your mom at that time?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So yes, let me back up for a moment, if I may. And in a way, it was difficult But my grandma was 80 years old, and in a way, having that experience for what it was, in a way, it's weird, but it prepared me in a way to then deal with my mom passing away, because at that point I was involved and I had to go with my dad and we had to make all the arrangements. And because I had already been through it, in some weird way, it was a little bit easier. In fact, my uncle has a theory that my grandma knew that my mom was really sick and she couldn't possibly bear the fact that she would be around to see her daughter pass away. So she went first.
Wow, I've got goosebumps as you said that, because I think that this is one of the things that as a parent, you would rather have your children bearing you, because then they have their whole lives ahead of them than you, their child. Yeah,
and my mom was, she basically lived for others her entire life. So, my grandma was a pretty strong woman. And so my mom was always in the shadow of her own mother. And yeah, so a part of me thought, I mean, maybe it's wrong to say that, oh, my mom has finally the opportunity to live a little bit on her own terms. But for whatever reason, it wasn't meant to be. So as far as, I guess, if you want me to try to unpack some of how the kids handle that, is that where you'd like to go next?
Yeah, I guess it's just that my curiosity is, and I know every person is different, but I think I used to try to hide things from my kids. Mm-hmm. And then we hit a few really hard things in our lives, and this was when my husband was still with us, and we decided that we were going to share with them, perhaps not everything, but that they could be part of what was happening for us as a family. You know, like when my husband got really sick after a surgery, and we had to deal with the outcomes of that. We sat down with the kids and we told them what was happening, and they were worried, and we had to reassure them over and over again. But it was like, in some ways, we kind of brought them into what was happening for us as a family, and we faced it together. Of course, we did protect them because we didn't go into major details. But I think listening to your story, thinking about like, you did have the opportunity to kind of have some preparation, quote unquote, when your grandma passed, but would have made a difference for you if your mom had said to you what was happening? Would that kind of ease the blow of finding out that she had cancer and then having her passing so quickly right after that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I basically knew, because my dad had told me, and so did, at one point, I think so did the doctor, because they didn't realize that she didn't want me to know. So yes, because I think it would have actually, I don't know if it would have made it easier for me, maybe it would have made it easier for her, but we basically pretended until the end.
And how was that? How was the pretending? Was that something you felt like it was beneficial for her or for you?
I mean, it was clear that it's something that she wanted to try to preserve that story, that everything was going to be okay. But yeah, I mean, I'm okay with it now if it's what kept her at peace in the end.
Okay. Yeah. We have to make peace with what it was, right? Because we can't go back and change things. But I really believe that every time we are pretending, it ends up hurting us and hurting the people that want to protect the most. But this is such a difficult conversation for parents to have, you know, like how do you actually sit down with your child and say, I am dying, you know, and it's, and often we don't have the emotional literacy to be able to even put the words into it. And so, and we want to preserve our kids. So We do a lot of things out of love that ends up hurting us sometimes and hurting the people that we love. But in some ways, I love what you said about that you have come to an understanding and come to accept that if that's what she needed, you know, often we do need to remember that the person that is dying has to maintain certain dignity or we're illusion even perhaps. And often we just say, oh, the truth is the best thing. But I think we need to take it with a grain of salt because people are really important and what they want for the few months or days that they have needs to be taken into consideration. So now thinking about that, you know, the things that the person that's dying, what they want needs to be taken into consideration. Let's flip that a little bit and go, the people that stay behind, what they need afterwards, after the person has passed away, needs to be taken into consideration as well. And I think that for me, there were lots of times after my husband passed away that I wanted to comfort my children. I wanted to make sure they were okay. I wanted to be there for them. But often what we tend to do as human beings is we give comfort or we show up to help people in the way that we would like to receive comfort or in the way that we would like to be helped. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work most of the time. It comes from a good place, good intentions, but often it doesn't work, and especially with teenagers. So thinking about this, what do you think that would have been helpful for you as a 19-year-old that lost your grandma and lost your mother, for the grown-ups around you to know? What was that that they did that was really helpful? What was that they did that was really unhelpful? If you could give some grown-ups around some suggestions, what would that be?
Yeah, sure. So that's a really good question. It can actually tie in the talking to your kids into that as well, because I think at the end of the day, and that might have something to do with my personality, but I'll touch on that. I think there has to be a certain level of honesty and a certain level of openness with your emotions, because we're all different. They're basically, you know, there's all these studies, you can take a test, I'll tell you what personality you are. There are four dominant ones, and then you usually have, everyone has like a mixture of two or three of them. So, you know, there's like the DISC method, and there's a bunch of others. So, and there are people that are more sensitive, there are more people that are more direct. I am more direct. So for me, it's a little bit easier sometimes, or I pretend it's easier. But so I think you have to have those conversations so that then you get to really learn who the person is. So that when it comes to that tough situation, you are better prepared to know how to handle them.
So you beforehand talking to your kids,
about
how the communication needs to be, because from one kid to another it can be very different, and from
exactly.
the parent can be very different as well, what people need and the way they communicate is different. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Because we are wired slightly differently, so we receive information differently. And you know, and we've all experienced this. You meet a person and they just rub you the wrong way. Mm. And often it's not them and it's not you. It's just we're wired differently. Mm-hmm. And it's learning it, and it's very hard, right? It took me years to learn this, and it was through mentorship basically. But once you recognize that there is this thing of four personalities, or four dominant character types, if you want, and you realize that there are people around you that are different from you, and you just start to have, I guess, a more open, not even mind, maybe just an open heart to the fact that people see the world differently from you, and that might even be your own kids, right?
Oh yeah.
And so, right, and you, I know, because we've talked about this a little bit offline. You know this very well, because your two kids are different from each other, even and from you. So I guess the point I'm trying to make is, if yes, exactly, if before you really hit really tough times, and losing a loved one is probably the toughest, then yeah, get to know the people around you and start to introduce even kids. Because I think teenagers, and especially when I was a little bit older, I think are certainly mature enough because we live in a tough world. So I think shielding him from problems is only gonna hurt him in the end. I think it's, you know, my personal opinion. So what I wish, well, for me, because of my personality type, what I wish the adults would have done, and it was minor, I can't say that it was a big deal. It was primarily at my mom's funeral, but I wish people didn't try to console me or try to coddle me, because what they were doing basically, and I understand that and I can't fault them for it, but they were experiencing their own grief and trying to console themselves by consoling me. But because of my personality type, that's not what I wanted. I wanted space, right? And it actually took effort for me to say goodbye to my mom in the way that I wanted to.
Wow. You know, I can say to you that our personalities are very different, yours and mine, right? Mm-hmm. I'm an extrovert, you know, I don't know, it's just quite disorganized, very creative, and a little bit all over the place. And what you said right now about people wanting to console me because they really were trying to console themselves, I can say that even as someone who has a very different personality than you, that really rubbed me the wrong way. Because I needed to grieve my own way and to say goodbye to my husband in my own way, and to express my grief in my own way. And what I call this, I couldn't babysit other people's grief, because my grief was so overwhelming. The only people that, for me at the time, their grief was more important than my own was my children. And so when people try to comfort or help, it came from a really good heart, came with great intentions. And I know that they were also struggling because, you know, they lost Jason, was a friend, was, you know, was different for everybody, the relationship they had with him. And they saw me falling apart. And of course, our tendency is to want to help. You know, I have that tendency as well when I see somebody suffering. But it's almost like I have a friend that says, the golden rule is, it says that you should treat others as you would like to be treated. But she says, the platinum rule is treat others the way they wanted to be treated. So when you talk about, talk to people beforehand and ask the tough questions and be really open and honest and say, what is it that you need? How can I help you in this moment? Or I can give this and help, would that be the help that you need right now? Treat other people like they would want to be treated, because every person is different, like what you said. Yeah.
That's beautiful, Tatiana. I'm gonna steal that. Yeah. The platinum rule. I think that's,
thanks to my friend
that's
Sue.
That's the one to live by.
My friend Sue, because she also works for personality. She's a personality coach for businesses, and so yeah, what you're talking about I'm familiar with because of her. So with those insights, I think one of the things that I wanted to touch on is about, what are some of the things that for you, looking back at, you know, when you were 19 and now, what would be like the big insights that you have got, having gone through the grief of your grandma passing and your mother passing at that stage of life and now where you are at? Can you see that there was a shift in the way that you grieve? Can you see that you have gained some insights because of the grief, or that grieving has in some way enriched you or changed you? Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. That's a good question. Well, as I told my friend recently that I have matured as I've grown older, and he told me, you haven't matured, you just mellowed out. So I don't know if it's true or not, but take it for what it's worth. But as far as grief, and like you said, that was 15 years ago, and I haven't experienced anything like that since. But I guess what I learned in it So I don't know if it's something I learned after, but it's something, well, it is some, obviously it's something I learned after the fact, but it's something that I wish I'd done before. So I think that's the biggest lesson, because losing my grandma triggered in me the thought that time here is not guaranteed, mm-hmm. and to spend more time with my mom, and I didn't get to do that either. So I think, so I got that lesson twice.
Wow.
So I think someone was really trying to hammer that point home. Mm. And I wish I could say that I learned it right then and there, but I didn't, because I was still a 19-year-old kid. And yeah, that feeling of, okay, I have to do something with my life and I have to accomplish and I have to focus, because I was fairly unfocused. I was pretty much done with like college and standardized education. So I was kind of coasting. And losing my grandma and my mom in those, you know, 2 months, basically, it, you know, it hit me in a way where I was like, oh, okay, I'm gonna get my life together. And I didn't, because the personality trait, I think it was still too strong. And so I still procrastinated. I handed in papers too late. I didn't hand in papers because I was running around doing theater, and that's what I wanted to do. And so I ignored some of the responsibility that maybe a more mature Yuri wouldn't have ignored. So I think that might be the biggest lesson, is I'm finally coming around. And you've seen some of that, because we actually share a little bit of that mission with our podcast, but also on the course we're taking, is I'm realizing that our time isn't guaranteed. And so we shouldn't waste it doing the things that don't bring value to the world or to us.
Mm. And often we do. Often we end up doing things out of obligation or out of a sense of duty to what other people think it's important to do. Or some weird vows that we made for ourselves way back then, and then we don't reevaluate them. As we change and mature and grow, things do change as well, and living a life that is aligned to our values is really important. And I think that you touched on something that is really valuable, is that grief changes us, and it makes us think about what is really important and what is really secondary. But I also think it takes a little bit of time for us to align ourselves with the values that we get or the insights that we get through the grieving process, because it is a process, right? And so for you, for example, you said that you were handing in papers late and you wanted to do well in academically, but you were just more interested in theater. And maybe in a subconscious level, that is where your safe place was. You know, that's where you felt like you needed to be for that time being. Perhaps your mind was wanting to kind of make the changes, but the changes are progressive, you know? And so by following your instincts on being with your theater crew and doing productions, that was an outlet that as you were trying to grow and mature and put those new goals into place, that perhaps was a safe space that gave you the ability to slowly get, you know, oiling up those machines so they could get going, rather than going straight into, that's it, I'm going to be an A student from now on. Because I think grief also does something to the way that we think, our brain, and we are not, some people are not capable of really focusing on tasks that require a lot of engagement with your rational brain. And so just, I think, giving ourselves space, finding a safe environment, safe people to be with, not completely stopping, because that can be really difficult to regain momentum, but allowing yourself to kind of go, okay, I have those insights, or perhaps I'm going to take it easy, you know, until I can actually fully launch and take off. It's important to figure out what is it that we need and how to nurture ourselves while we're getting stronger to then put those insights into action. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. I haven't thought about it in that detail, but I think you're right. And for me, and in a way, maybe for a son, losing a mother is, I don't know, I guess because I was left with my dad and our personalities are similar in that we don't share, I'm very direct. So I don't share my emotions. It doesn't mean that I don't feel them, or we just don't talk about it. Right. It just wasn't talked about. And something I've talked with my dad about briefly over the years, and our relationship sort of ebbed and flowed, but I think there's something about getting in touch with yourself, whatever that means, and being comfortable with who you are. And I think you're absolutely right. That does take time. And you have to give yourself the space to do it, but you also have to recognize that at the end of the day, it's up to you to do it.
Yeah. And perhaps seeking the people that you feel most comfortable with to share your emotions, because, and those people may often not be your parents. It might be, you know, your peers, your friends from school or from the theater group or from, you know, the sports groups that teenagers are in. Most often, but it's important to seek that connection with people, even if you cannot talk to your parents. It's important to talk to someone, I think. So in talking to someone, that can bring a level of well-being for us, even for people, like you said, you have those emotions, but you often don't share them. But so what would be other things apart from talking that you have put into place in your own life to look after yourself, for your own well-being, for especially for the times when perhaps the grief might come back and you know, like your mind or emotions kind of revisit those elements of grief that most people feel like they have dealt with, but they keep on coming back and back again because grief comes in waves. So do you have any daily practices or any well-being practices that you put in place in your life?
Well, I don't know if they're specific to grief because I'm sort of reevaluating some things in the last 6 months, but I think they're applicable universally. But before I get into that, let me say one thing about the grief that people think that they've dealt with grief, but it comes back. I don't know how many years exactly, but I've basically lived every single day with the thought that I lost my mom, right? At least once a day, every day for years, that thought was still there. And it's, and so I think it's learning that at the end of the day, we're here for a reason. And so you have to accept that. And you have to let go. That doesn't mean you forget. You just let go. And maybe that has, I know, and I'm not a psychologist, so I don't know anything about that kind of stuff, but something about the survivor's guilt and all that stuff that may possibly play a role into it. But you'd have to talk to a professional to get into that. But as far as practices, for me, just realizing that, like I said, I mean, personal responsibility, I realized is a huge thing for me. It's basically my core value now. And so once I was able to focus on that and realize that it's okay to be, I've actually talked to a few people now on the podcast about this, that it's okay to be selfish, because being selfish is not the same as being egotistical, because people associate being selfish and self-love with being about the ego, but it's not about the ego at all. It's about being your most authentic self. But to do that, you have to really recognize yourself. So for me, it's just been little daily habits, like getting up at the same time every day, making my bed, making sure that before I go to bed, there are no dishes left in the sink, that kind of silly stuff that I used to not do. And we don't realize that a lot of the things in our environment actually play a bigger role on our emotional state than we think.
Yeah, I agree.
And that, you know, and that dirty plate, it may be just like, oh, it's not a big deal. I'm just going to do it later. No, just do it right then and there, because you have no idea the amount of energy that plate is going to drain for the rest of the day. So little like that. And I know it takes time to develop those habits, but now it's, I just do it. That and for me, a daily walk. Because it helps me clear my head, but also I think the physical exercise plays a role into it. Because I've heard it, you know, we hear it over and over again. We just don't do it. But that exerting physical activity releases endorphins, and it does. So it can play a huge role. So as simple as just going for a walk.
Yeah. And I think especially when you are in the early stages of grief, a lot of people find that they have no energy. And a lot of people find that they can't just, they just can't be bothered to do things. You know, like my husband died, why would I clean the sink? You know, my husband died, why would I go for a walk? Why would I look after my health? And I think it's finding the why. And for me, it was doing those small things create a sense of empowerment. I know control is an illusion, but when I felt like if my house was clean and my dishes were done and my laundry was done, I had some sense of there is something in my life that I can do. I might not be able to face another day without Jason, but I can do my dishes or I can make my bed. And as silly as it might seem, those things really helped me. And then I got a dog and I went for daily walks with my dog. And that was one of the best things for me because having a dog forced me to take him out for a walk every day. And walking every day was when I cried a lot, I prayed a lot, and I didn't want to do it. But by the time I came home after half an hour, 40 minutes, I could breathe, which is another thing. Like people find it really hard to breathe, you know, when especially in the early stages. So thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. And I know our time is coming to an end. So I just want in closing to ask you this one last question. If you knew that today was your very last day on this earth, what would you do? Who would you see? What would you say? You know, how would you spend the rest of this day?
Yeah, that's a tough one for an introvert.
Come on, don't get
cracked. Because I might just say I'm going to spend it by myself and be selfish.
Well, that's what you need. Why not? Would that be what would really, you know, fill you up and bring joy to you? Is that what you would? Okay, if you're going to spend the day by yourself, what would you do by yourself?
Well, actually, now I've just realized I would change my answer, actually.
Okay.
I would record as many podcast episodes as I can and make as many connections as I can before I left. Because that's the sort of the new thing that's been really inspiring for me to be able to connect with strangers and learn from them and maybe empower them. But more importantly, through that conversation, go out into the world, making the world a little bit better.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So that's my new answer. Okay, record as many podcast episodes in one day as I can.
Cool. Well, you jumped the gun on me because I was going to ask you another question, which is if you knew that you had only 1 year to live, and what would you do? And I'm guessing the answer would be record as many podcasts as you can in this whole year. But is there anything else that you would like to leave in this world as a legacy?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I don't know if it's a physical thing, but just the knowledge that the world is a tough place. And yes, there is evil out there, but the way we fight it is not by being outraged, but by taking personal responsibility for our own lives and living the life on, I know it's a cliche, but living life on your own terms and finding that, which I know it isn't easy. And in many ways I am blessed to at 34 having found the mission. I think we'll find out. Ask me again in a year.
Okay.
But I think it's pretty clear. So that's what I would say, is take personal responsibility for your own life. Don't wait for someone else, because while you're waiting for someone else, life is what happens. I forget the exact quote, so I'm going to butcher it, but it's something like, life is what happens while you're waiting for something like that. So don't let life happen to you. Make your own life and then live it.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think especially for those of us who have lost people that we love, I think about it all the time about, you know, my husband didn't get to live another day. I get to live today. I've got today. And so what am I going to do today with this life that I've been given? And often it's not just about accomplishing things. It's about getting in tune with myself and going, you know, today is a really tough day. So today I'm just going to look after myself. I might just spend some time with my kids. I might just do some journaling. I might walk the dog. I might take a nap if I can. I'll go to work and I'll do my best. But I'm also going to be really honest with myself and not try to just push through to accomplish certain goals if that's going to leave me burned out or empty or resentful, because then I ended up kind of just dumping it all on the people that I love most. And so I'm just really mindful of that as well. But yeah, taking full responsibility for myself and prioritizing my well-being has become something that I had to learn after Jason died. So thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And one thing that might help, and without putting too much weight on it, but ask yourself, what would they want you to do? Would they want you to go through life being, you know, depressed and distraught for the rest of your life? Or would they want you to live your best life?
Mm, yeah.
Because you couldn't help them leaving.
Yeah. So. I think sometimes it's important to find what is it that helps you to survive, and then do that so that you can build enough resilience and enough strength to start coming to a place of wanting to thrive. Because those are two different things. Yeah. It takes time though. Thank you so much, Yuri. It's been such a pleasure talking to you, listening to your story, your insights. It's been just really, really beneficial for me. I'm sure it's going to be beneficial for lots of people that are going to be listening to this podcast. And so, if you are listening to this podcast, please leave us a review, rate us, subscribe, and don't forget to check out Yuri's podcast, The Awkward Mind. It's on iTunes. And also leave him a review and 5 stars, because he's pretty awesome. Thank you so much for listening, and light and peace to all of you. Thanks, Yuri.
Thank you, Tatiana.
Bye.